The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, where sports betting lives. Live from Circa, VSiN, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube, TV. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9 alongside as well. So much more than a producer. What's happening?
Not much. I don't think we're going to stay perfect in certain millions.
No, perfect season is over for you.
Perfect season's over, yeah.
I fell to a mediocre 3-2 with the Jets loss yesterday. We'll get to that momentarily. On the show today, Drew Dinsick will join us. I feel like it's been a month since we had Drew on.
I know. Guess
he just had his week before season, let me appease the wife week, so he wasn't on with us. That's what he said. I'm just making it myself. That's what he said, right from his mouth.
It's a smart move.
Hope his wife's not listening. Later on the show, also, we will get into some Survivor talk. Have you taken a look at the old Week 2 Survivor slate?
Oh, yes, I have.
Oh.
Yes, I have.
Boy, this is a interesting week of Survivor.
Yeah.
There are no right answers to this quiz. I do not know what I'm doing, but it may be some kamikaze stuff here.
Oh, really?
Up. Oh, yeah.
I feel like I'm actually narrowed down between,
really?
Like, two sides already. Yeah.
Is one of those sides Indianapolis and your boy?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because before we do anything, it's interesting because the Colts are taking money. I know we're supposed to talk about the Jets and the Niners real quick, but the Colts are taking money, right? And the Colts are more than a 3-point favorite now against the Packers on the road.
It's three. It's been bouncing between 3 and 3.5.
Okay,
it's all like juiced 3.
I guess 3 yesterday.
Yeah,
but and I get it, right? It should be 3. It's Malik Willis, obviously. That's built into the line. But this notion that it would go over the 3, right, starts to get into this territory of okay. The difference between Jordan Love and Malik Willis is great because the look ahead was 5.
It was 5
in favor of Green Bay.
So it is 8-point difference.
So again, for the new bettors, right, or the newish bettors out there, a pre-flop line in a pro football game, the only players generally that matter to the point spread are quarterbacks. There are rare exceptions when another skilled position player, maybe a defensive player, will matter a 0.5 point or a point, you know, that kind of thing. But from starting quarterback to backup quarterback, these things can move massively. And obviously, it's also not static. Tom Brady, when he was the quarterback of the Patriots, if they had a home game against the worst team in the NFL, it was a different line movement. If he was out, let's say, if he was a road game against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, mm-hmm. right? So nothing is exactly static. But just to give you an idea about that, what's already an 8-point spread to the 3, right? From Green Bay being a 5-point favorite to a 3-point dog, which is where I guessed it yesterday. And by the way, administrative, parenthetical aside to an aside, administrative note, because a lot of people were asking, Mondays during football season, podcast form of the show is on the Beating the Book podcast feed, not on the Numbers Game feed. The rest of the week during football season, Tuesday through Friday, this show, podcast feed, a Numbers Game, Mondays, it's on the Beating the Book feed, just to let you know, because lots of folks were tweeting in about that. But that 8-point shift is akin to something like back in the day. I'll give you an example. When Andrew Luck was the quarterback of the Colts and he would be out and it would go to Scott Tolzien, that was the biggest shift in those days in the NFL. And that was 8 points. And so I understand Malik Willis, people have a question as to whether or not he can even complete a forward pass in this league.
Yes.
But if you're getting past 8 points, we're getting a little mashugana.
We are right on the border of being a little wild.
So I'd like you to say the word mashugana.
Mashugana. This is not a wildly big bet for me, but that is like, it is, I think we often throw out the phrase of what is a quarterback worth to the spread.
Yes.
But that's all dependent on what the backup situation is.
Well, in this case, I would argue, and I'm as big of a Jordan Love fan. Remember, I'm the guy who thought he'd be good right before last year. It's also kind of it's on both sides a little bit, right? It's not just the Malik Willis side of it. It's like, okay, we are all convinced 100% that Jordan Love is elite at this point also, right? That might be, and I'm a huge fan
that
of
that might
his.
Be flawed. Yes.
That might be true. It also might be flawed.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, if you go past the 8 and all of a sudden the Colts are like giving 3.5 or 4 on the road, I'm just saying we're getting a little shaky there.
Yeah.
So if people are gravitating towards that as a survivor pick, I'm just, oh, I know we're not having the Survivor discussion yet. I just wanted to get there with that.
Okay. I mean, I expect that there would be some sharp bettors out there on Green Bay catching a 3.5. Yeah.
We can come here on Monday, and by the way, it'll be like, well, Malik Willis couldn't complete a forward pass, and it should have been more than 8. You know?
Yeah, because you are, I mean, like, you're talking, that big of a difference in quarterbacks is about as extreme as you're going to see.
Luck to Tolzien was bigger than Brady to whomever the Brady backup was at any given time.
Yep.
So anyway, just as a historical comparison with how lines move anyway. Sorry about that.
5 minute aside from the Colts.
Sorry about that. It's just sort of a stream of consciousness on the show. So the game last night, I will speak for myself, but I know I'm speaking for others. I could not have been more wrong about the New York Jetropolitans showing up for this one. Shout out to Michael Lombardi on the morning line, because Michael Lombardi yesterday said he was... I don't know if he was being delicate with his words or he was choosing his words carefully, but he definitely gave the vibe that Christian McCaffrey would not be a go. And as it turns out, we find out right before the game that Christian McCaffrey was out. Now, it didn't matter ultimately in the end, but it might have explained why the spread never bounced up on the Niners, right? If anything, it teetered on the 3.5 rather than going up from the 4, because I got that part wrong, too. But McCaffrey wasn't a go. Jordan Mason, who ended up having the game of his life. And when I say the game of his life, I'm talking about dating back to his high school days before Georgia Tech. 28 carries for 147 yards and a touchdown as the Niners did anything they wanted to in a 32-19 win that, Kelly, the final score does not reflect how big of a blowout this was at all.
Not at all.
Cosmetic touchdown for the Jets at the end when they pulled Aaron Rodgers and put Tyrod Taylor in the game, or that's Tyrod Taylor, if I'm going to say his name correctly. Aaron Rodgers, 13 for 21 for 167. But the point of, I mean, first of all, one, Kyle Shanahan, anybody apparently could be in that backfield in his running scheme. No knock on Jordan Mason. Obviously, they're phenomenal beyond belief with Christian McCaffrey, but it certainly didn't harm them yesterday. Trent Williams, I mean, the handicap going with the Jets, part of it was, all right, Ayuk just got to camp. By the way, Peyton Manning murdering him for dropping that pass in the end zone, which I thought was a little over the top. It's like he was fully stretched out.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah. It was just like, relax.
He had a couple drops, though, that I thought were a little uncharacteristic.
Well, that was the one that he really got into. But Trent Williams playing the first 65 snaps forget Pro Bowl form, his Hall of Fame form in this game. Purdy just had an easy time of it every time. Besides the first, right, the beginning of the game, it was 3-0 Niners, and then it was 7-3, and then 7-6. But besides that first sequence where the Jets had some hope, and remember that Jets drive to get a touchdown early was 3 third down and long conversions. By third and long, I mean 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 6, all to Garrett Wilson. Once the Niners figured that out, the rest of the game on offense, first of all, the Niners could do anything they wanted to on the ground. They outgained the Packers on the ground 180-68. And through the air, how many times was Juwan Jennings just wide open, or Kittle wide open, or Debo doing whatever he wanted to? And I would say even so, and Robert Saleh had that look every time they flashed the camera to him. You looked at Saleh and you're like, this guy has no answers. None whatsoever. Like, none. And then on the other side of the ball, this will be thrown around, mainstream media more than anything. Nathaniel Hackett with just zero creativity, zero, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to try to, yeah, the run's not really working. Let's see if we can think of anything. No, nothing.
No.
Yeah, it was a brutal, but.
Were you more impressed with San Francisco or more disappointed in New York?
Well, so this was going to be my question. What is your take? Is your takeaway? Because, you know, I immediately parles the Grover Cleveland producers, Jeffrey Parlay, our buddy. He's a Jets fan. And so I immediately texted him. I was like, all right. And I think he had the proper response, which is what I was trying to get at from it, which is, you know, it's one game. The Niners are still great. Like when we did our power rankings, I know San Francisco was my number one NFC. I can't remember if I had him number one overall. I'm as big of a Niners guy as anybody. But in this particular situation, based on their offseason, I was like, okay, well, maybe the Jets getting the points here is the move. That didn't work at all. But is this just one game where it's like, okay, well, the Jets, no one would have been surprised if they lost by 4, right? So, okay, you lose one, you lose to a great team. Is this a bigger cause for concern, or are you, in the Niners case, it's just ho-hum, move along. They're what you thought they were, even more perhaps. So I don't know Or is the Jets' time to panic already, I guess is the question.
No, I think it's a little on both sides. So like the way I'll describe it with okay, if you're a Jets fan, Jets backer, I look, it's disappointing. It's not a great start. It's not what you were hoping to see with Aaron Rodgers back, no. Right? But there is plenty of time left in the season. It is one game. I think that's the way you need to look at it. Plenty of time to freak out in the coming weeks if it continues to look this bad, right? I think for me, as someone, we went over those NFC power rankings last week, and it was kind of Lions, Eagles, 49ers all in the wash. I don't really know if I have one that's clear cut above the rest right
Niners.
Now. I think last night it was Niners saying, hey, we're still the team to go through in the NFC.
I don't know how anyone ever took the scent off the Niners being number one from my perspective, but I certainly had the Jets yesterday. That proved to be ridiculously dumb.
I mean, the only concern, right? The only concern you obviously come away from if you're a 49ers fan or backer is just, okay, well, what's the deal with McCaffrey going forward, right? I mean, how long is this going to linger? Right? How big of an issue could this be?
I also want to say this, too. So we saw in week one, you had Aaron Rodgers, you had Kirk Cousins. Neither were spectacular. Mm. By the way, Aaron Rodgers should stop smiling through a game, by the way, that they're getting crushed in. I just want to point that out as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe relax with you're so cool, you're above all this. But the whole thing with the Achilles, like I know some people are going to be like, I don't know. Neither looked really great with them coming off the Achilles. I think both, and we documented it yesterday on Guessing Lines, how unimaginative Zach Robinson's game plan was with the Falcons. Literally every formation they were in, you knew exactly if they were going to run or pass. And then with the Jets and Hackett yesterday was as unimaginative as possible. So I don't think you can anyone jumping to the Achilles conclusion should not. Like they were both Cousins and Rodgers in circumstances where their offensive coordinators just didn't do anything for them.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anyway, you end up with your millions. I ended up 3-2, but you had a 5-0 and a 4-0-1.
Four and one.
I don't
see 4-0 with the Jets riding last.
You're 4-0-1, and you're 4-1 both looking good after 1 week.
God, I was hoping for a 5-0, man.
Maybe you
That's
should
so
be
rare.
Maybe you should be thinking about the quarterly already, Kelly. It's within reach. Drew Dinsick on the other side. His thoughts on football next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With the NFL underway, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Make this football season your best ever with full VSiN Pro access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard. Pardon me, to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits, betting systems, 24/7 video access. Grab our football season special. Get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for just $175. Just start a monthly subscription for just $9.99 and see why VSiN Pro is your ticket to a winning season. Do not wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up and start betting smarter today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. I made that for the New England audience. Just in case they needed a translation. By the way, Kelly Bidlin struggling today with the buttons on his shirt. It should be pointed out. So he's doing this duress.
I'm dropping, Kel. I'm going. Yeah.
So he's
a lot more comfortable.
He's going a little butterfly and Kelly Bidlin showing a little chest hair, everybody.
I love this shirt, but it's the worst second button shirt, man.
Our ladies demo just shot up in the air. Nice job. Please butt that. this guy has himself a suntan. He did the whole week before NFL season with the wife up in wine country. But he got back, of course, for the NFL season. He joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. He's the host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing well. It's great to be with you guys. I hope everybody had a very successful week one. And I feel like I'm somewhere new. This isn't the D. And you know what? Actually, good thing you're not at the D. The ladies would be catcalling Kelly at 7 in the morning with the Bud Lights. Yeah.
You have no idea, Drew. None. The D. Noted Kelly Bidlin magnet place.
Yeah, we'd have to wake him up first, but yeah.
So I guess, first of all, the question is, and I'll ask just the generic one first, from a betting standpoint, from just a football viewing standpoint, like what's your biggest, I won't say your biggest takeaway from week one. What's the thing you saw juxtaposed against your preseason handicap where the light bulb sort of went off and you're like, okay, I at least have to pay attention to that. I might've been wrong about this.
Okay. Well, my two higher conviction things, I felt like I got positive reinforcement with what we saw, which were the Houston offense is going to be a problem for everyone. And the Seattle defense has signs of a quick turnaround. And then basically everything else, I think, played pretty much to chalk. There were five question marks at the quarterback position that we got very uncertain to negative answers about, that are kind of concerning from like a quality of the product standpoint. So
I like to hear this. Yeah, let's list.
Yeah,
those.
Well, I mean, start with Burrow. Like, we hadn't seen Burrow since the wrist injury. He pretty clearly looks still hurt to me. That matters a ton for the purpose of like, can his wrist heal if he is throwing the ball 30 times a week?
Good
and
point.
Also, like, the bigger surprise for Burrow for me was the way that the end of the game was called by Zach Taylor felt like he didn't really understand that Burrow was limited.
So right? I point, well, oh, you said that he didn't understand. I pointed it out.
It felt like it. Yeah. He was drawing up brilliant stuff to get guys wide open, like in the intermediate deep part of the field. And Burrow just didn't pull the trigger. And that was spooky.
I pointed out that punt that they decided to go with, you know, fourth and five in their own territory was questionable to begin with. Right. I was like, oh, are they sort of capitulating on this? But you're saying something different. You're saying about the game plan itself.
Yeah, it didn't necessarily feel like I've seen game plans set up where you're expecting your quarterback to have an ADT of like 3 yards, which Burrow was kind of in that ballpark for a lot of the game. And that didn't feel like one of those game plans, really. Like, the most of the stuff was sort of release valve as opposed to like, hey, we're setting up some quick short stuff for you here, buddy. He was not under pressure. The Patriots played defense fine, but it wasn't like that was like a masterful defensive performance from the Pats as on the rewatch in particular. So Burrow not being healthy and carrying this wrist injury is a huge, huge concern.
Great point. Let me just throw in, because you might be too cool for school for some folks. ADT, average depth of target, is what Drew is talking about. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes. And his ADOT. The air yards were a concern for Burrow. And this week, like, this, that would be the best game on Sunday would be Chiefs Bengals. And now I'm like, Bengals are kind of on the outs there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was one of the five. The other kind of obvious one was Kirk Cousins, and everybody's going to note this because the tape on Cousins was it didn't feel like you were watching an NFL football player out there. He was that statuesque. And I guess if his, you know, if his plant leg is a problem and if his mobility is that in question, anytime they go up against meaningful pass rushes, the Falcons are in absolutely, you know, brutal spots. And again, like, games that I was excited to see, let's see Falcons play the Eagles, see the Falcons play the Chiefs. Like, well, now those games are kind of.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a bit of a bummer. And honestly, like, you look at the, you know, what was the most talked about thing about the Falcons in the preseason was like, oh, their schedule's so easy. It's so easy. Well, actually, now that you look at it, and if the Saints and the Bucks have like pulses, then this could turn into like a very bad season for Atlanta, which really complicates what in the world do you do next year, right? So Atlanta is absolutely sort of like the drama team to watch without question.
Also, when you're in the shotgun, don't throw 100% of the time. And when you're in the pistol, don't run 96% of the time or whatever those percentages were. That doesn't help either.
Yeah, but it kind of felt like they were hamstrung. Didn't really have like a choice in terms of doing anything to create misdirection or obfuscation at all. Like, they were just sitting duck statue stuff. And that's a problem for today's NFL with as good as the defensive linemen are out there, but as athletic as they are, particularly when you go up against one that has, you know, elite athletes like the Steelers. So that was pretty concerning. I was on the right side of this one, so I quietly enjoyed it. But Deshaun Watson might be just like done.
Maybe.
I mean, it's sketchy to draw that type of conclusion from one game. But we saw him drop back and pass a lot. He had happy feet, miserable mechanics, like, looked like he had not, like, he was still kind of learning to play the position of quarterback, which is absurd. And it was, again, against one of the more violent defenses in the NFL that had a pressure rate that was just absolutely ridiculous. But it's not like the reinforcements are coming this week for the Browns offensive line. Like, it's going to take a while for that unit to come together and gel. And like, I would actually like, I'm starting to wonder like how many starts are we actually going to see from Watson here before they're like, yeah. You know, we still have a team that's built to win. We went to the playoffs with Joe Flacco last year. Like, we can't sacrifice our season just because we're paying Watson. And that is a fascinating question to see how that organization handles the, you know, the quarterback position, because I don't think that the glimmer of hope that you had that Watson was just going to turn it around seems to be fading to the point of like almost laughable that he's going to be anything better than a top 20 or than like 20th best quarterback in the NFL. And even being the 30th best quarterback would be an improvement based on what we saw. So, Watson was wild.
Not to keep interrupting your flow, but I mean, you're right. One game you don't know, because how much of that was Dallas just having ridiculous talent on defense, right?
Sure.
And having to deal with Micah to begin with. But you know, the mechanics thing is a great point. And I immediately, as you said that, I think about RG3. The underrated part about RG3's career is, again, ridiculous rookie year, won the rookie of the year over Andrew Luck. The hope was eternal. But then, of course, in that playoff game, he blows out his knee. And when he came back from the injury, his mechanics had gone to crapola. So it wasn't just the injuries, right? There was something about having not played for a while or just rehabbing, whatever it was, that he just kind of forgot to play quarterback. And so what you're saying with Watson is sort of similar to that. That's the guy that it reminds me of in that respect.
Yeah. There are not that many examples you can point to of a guy who just like forgets how to football. But it did not feel like Watson was even the same human being that we saw in Houston for so far, almost every start I've seen him make in a Browns uniform. So it is very bizarre. And their decision making about what do we do with the quarterback position, considering how talented the defense is really fascinating to me. And then the other two quarterbacks who, you know, were just wildly, you know, like there was some question, how are they going to look coming off of an ACL? How is he going to look under a new system? Well, Daniel Jones and Bryce Young are not it. And I think I'm going to make a case for one of those quarterbacks this week. Actually, I'm going to make a case for both of them. But they were both pretty atrocious. And, you know, it's so I guess my major takeaway was the upside from the quarterback position, the promise of hope, the preseason.
Yeah.
We haven't played a game yet. Who knows?
Yeah.
A lot of that went flying out the window with what we saw. And the ones that like concerned me the most surely are the health stuff. And I guess to go back to, you know, your preseason expectations, I thought Pittsburgh was absolutely sitting ducks. I thought they were trash. I looked at the second half of the schedule. I'm like, this is absolute, they go to schedule hell around Thanksgiving. Well, now I look at it and I'm like, you might have a 3-game stretch of Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jake Browning, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. That doesn't sound as scary as, what I was thinking. And, you know, so there is now.
Oh, no.
Not again. Like, absolutely. And by the way, the Steelers offense was as bad as I expected, but it didn't matter. Oh, yeah.
And of course, you didn't even mention any of the rookie quarterbacks who obviously didn't prove anything week one. Drew Didsik's week two thoughts on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live from Circa, it is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Ah, yes, a beautiful studio. Let it wash over us. It's like a very a light, filtery light.
That shot looks crisp on you, man. That little tight shot. Yeah, I like it. You get the book in the corner, you know. That's what we're here for.
Maybe you should get the crisp shot on your chest hair, by the way. Well, maybe you should do that. We were, by the way, Drew Didsik, kind enough always to hang with us for a couple segments. Drew Didsik from both the Deep Dive and the Bet the Edge podcast with Andy Molitor and Jay Croucher, respectively, wherever podcasts are distributed. And we were just solving the NFL's problems off air, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. We were doing it. And, we were talking yesterday, and I mentioned this on Guessing Lines yesterday, the quarterback play overall, we just alluded to it, atrocious. You pointed out, Drew, off air, that only two guys got to 300 yards, for God's sakes, Tua and Matthew Stafford on the Sunday night game. But I was mentioning, you know, just okay, if you want to fix this kickoff thing, just make the touchback the 35-yard line, then no one will kick it through the end zone anymore. But then the second thought is, as I mentioned yesterday, and we talked about just now off air, nobody misses field goals anymore. There was a time, again, 1982, Mark Mosley won the NFL MVP for kicking 27 field goals in a row, and everybody thought it was just the most amazing thing in the world. He topped out in the low 50s in terms of his long field goals. I remember the Skins used to bring in when they had like when Chip Lowmiller was their kicker and he was one of the best kickers in the league. When they would try a 56 yarder, they would bring in this dude, Steve Cox. I was reminded of this on Twitter yesterday, and it was like the coolest thing ever. I was like, Cox is coming in a kick, a 56 yarder. This is amazing. And now they all hit. It's like a chip shot. So if you put the touchback at the 35 on the one hand, and then you have these kickers who don't miss, you could just gain 20 yards and kick and have 3 points every drive. What do we do? So we can't do that.
Hey, man, we're making the game more dynamic. We're making it dynamic, Gil.
Explain to folks why you emphasize that word.
It was just killing me watching Red Zone on Sunday because they made a specific point of emphasis to bring up the dynamic kickoff. Sure, and dude. One of the things that like I quietly enjoy about Red Zone, because I'm usually like if I'm like engaged in the action, I'm not on my phone, so I'm not following like the breaking what just happened. And so when they cut to a special teams, and they did this a couple times, I'm usually triggered to, okay, we got something. Like, yes. Something big's about to happen here. And that did happen. Like the blocked punt for Tennessee was a good example. The blocked punt for the Texans was a good example. And then there were probably 20 other examples of, let's go to Houston for a dynamic kickoff. And it's a touchback. And like that, just that over and over again, just kind of like proof of concept that like a lot of teams, you know, we made a lot in the preseason about like, can't wait till we get to the real games and see what they got planned for these dynamic kickoffs. And, the Chiefs kicking through the end zone 6 times.
Kelly pointed this out off air, though. Did we even know it was called dynamic?
I didn't know that. Sunday? I heard it 72 times on Sunday. Yeah. Red Zone had a ton, Drew. You're right. But then it was every broadcast. I mean, it carried into Sunday night football. I don't know if I caught it as much last night.
It was like last night. But it was like Roger Goodell called Scott Hanson and was like, you need to say dynamic 25 times.
We trademarked this, okay? Make sure we get it out there.
And when DJ Dallas, who's
getting a phone call, by the way? The guy that came up with the branding of dynamic kickoff. It didn't work.
It didn't work out. Wasn't that dynamic. DJ Dallas took it to the house, like Scott Hanson acted like somebody threw 8 touchdown passes.
Like, it was the slowest kickoff return ever. Goodness. By the end of it, you're like, is DJ Dallas going to make it? I don't know if he's going to make it.
Oh, God. Yeah. So week 2, what have you bet so far then?
So just kind of like a snapshot, my biggest adjustment down of any team was Green Bay. That's obviously because of the absence of Jordan Love. As aggressive as a downgrade as I can make for Green Bay, I still can't get to 3.5 here for the Colts.
I was just talking about that, dude.
I upgraded Indianapolis too. Like I was really impressed with the kind of explosive nature of the downfield passing game there. I was impressed with the skill position players besides Pittman, who I didn't really hold in especially high regard. So I'm up on the Colts. I'm down on the Packers. I still can't get to 3.5. So I'm out on that game. My other big downgrades, we kind of mentioned, all involving quarterback health. I'm down on Atlanta. I'm down on Cincinnati. I'm down on Cleveland. And then downgraded Las Vegas to a degree because of the defense being pushed around by the Chargers, although the Chargers offensive line might be quite special. And then the Raiders, just in general, the coaching was probably the biggest LOL a moment of the weekend with the punt.
Punts plural.
100th percentile surrender index. 100th percentile. Yeah. Like we saw the most cowardly punt of all time. Wow. In 2024. You don't say.
Most cowardly punt and most ridiculous field goal. Also, right?
Yeah. Yes, the coaching was quite bad. Turns out maybe Antonio Pierce was better served as an interim coach, but we'll get to that later this season, I think. The upgrades for me were pretty minor. I'm up on Minnesota, mostly because the defense was better than I expected. But again, that could be more Daniel Jones than it would be Flores getting his guys to play above their level. I'm up on the Chargers, that offensive line, and just in general, the offense being coherent against what I thought was one of the better pass rushes in the league heading into week 1 was very impressive. Doesn't matter if they don't have good skill position players. If you're going to give Herbert that much time, he's going to find Ladd McConkey whenever he feels like it. I'm upgrading New Orleans up on Pittsburgh, but mostly just because of the defense. The Pittsburgh offense still remains the worst in the NFL outside of the Carolina Panthers for me. And then small upgrades for Tampa Bay. It's very, very tough to get serious about upgrading some of the teams that played like who we know and expected to be at the bottom of the NFL. Like, so, you know, I'm very cautiously upgrading the Saints and the Bucks, for instance. Yeah. But I'm also very hopeful that they're good, because we need good teams in the NFL badly. And if both of those teams can continue to play the way we saw week one, I think we're going to be in for a much more fun NFC race, at least. So,
but I agree with that sentiment about Carolina and Tampa Bay, because I was talking about this yesterday, which is, okay, New Orleans and Tampa Bay, which is, do we really know if New Orleans is good having played Carolina? And the Washington defense was so bad that I don't know if we can make any conclusions about Tampa Bay. How did this translate to bets for you? Have you bet anything?
Yeah. So the one kind of unit that I'm still a little cool on relative to market, and I didn't get a huge sign that I needed to correct, was the Miami offense. And I make the Bills actually small favorite on Thursday Night Football. So I played Bills money line plus 117. In general, I still need to see Miami in a big spot in a primetime game beat a good team. There's like a little bit of an intangibles there on top of just my numbers say the Bills should be small favorites. I played Raiders plus 9.5. I'm not concerned about the availability of Lamar Jackson despite him missing practice, but I am not anywhere close to a 10-point spread between these two teams. The Raiders, you know, pass rush aforementioned has a brilliant matchup against the Baltimore pass protection that was wildly underwhelming against Kansas City. So my fare on that one, for instance, is like closer to 6. So 9.5 felt like a reasonable play. Even after downgrading the Raiders, I'm still there. So that was a fun one. I took Tampa plus 7 versus the Lions. This is one I had circled in the preseason just because I the margin between those two teams in the playoff game when everything was going right for the Lions was still felt like, you know, it was pretty close despite the Lions covering that game. And now you have, a Buccaneers team that's even more healthy with even better pass protection. I think that offense could really do some damage to a Lions defense that had no answers for Cooper Kupp on Sunday night. And then I played, hold your nose and take a terrible team in the worst game of the week. I bet the Giants money line plus 122. It goes back to your point about the Washington Commanders defense. They have talent problems, they have scheme problems, they have tackling problems. And I think just in general,
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
Other than that. Yeah. And also, like, Sam Darnold played great for the Vikings. That was one of the quarterbacks we had questions about, and he afforded himself well despite being under pressure quite a lot. I think that the Giants D-line is going to have a much more successful day against Daniels, despite Daniels being, you know, quite mobile and being the most impressive of the rookies, in my opinion. I still think that the Giants D-line could be a distinguishing factor there in keeping the Commanders in check again. Time, by the way, Daniel's time to throw, 2.3 seconds. Yeah. That's not very good.
Not good.
And I know, yeah, you're up against an aggressive blitzing defense with Bowles, but that's a huge warning sign. Commies defense is even bigger warning sign. So everybody who buried Daniel Jones and is calling for, you know, him to be benched, blah, 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 I think they may need to take a seat for a week as the Giants get a win in the capital city.
Drewski, we might be oppo on all four of those in terms of my instinct. Yeah, all four of those. Yeah. And you raise good points on all on certainly on the Giants Commanders more than any. Like, that's the one where I'm like, yeah, you might be right about that. But all four, I think my instinct was in the other direction. We'll see. It's week two. We'll see how these go. But I think the Ravens to me,
the one I'm surprised.
This is the one where I can see them winning by 30 at home against the Raiders.
Good.
Yeah.
They could. I don't know. The Ravens don't really have a downfield passing attack. That was kind of one of the key takeaways of that game against the Chiefs. Like, there was nobody getting open down the field. And, if the pass rush shows up, then that's kind of what I'm hoping to keep that game close. Yeah. Maybe I should have just played the under.
That feels like a standard Ravens MO, though. Drew, thank you. Appreciate it as always. Drew Dinsigan.
All right, best luck.
You too at @whale_capper. Imagine when Hanson gets to say dynamic kickoff in Duval County. Oh, he's going to love that. Survivor Talk next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you the type of player who's looking to get down $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price of the market? Well, are you? It's not rhetorical. Or perhaps you're looking to get your in-game play instantly accepted. Introducing Sport Trade, the app that's going to change sports betting forever. Minus 104 lines instead of the typical minus 110, instant in-game betting, and a concierge player service. Sport Trade, perfect for those who want a premium betting experience. Sport Trade live already in New Jersey, Colorado, and Iowa, and coming to Arizona and Virginia this fall. Download Sport Trade, use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on each wager in your first week. Terms apply. Got to be 21 years or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Skill Alexander, it's a numbers game. Kelly Bidlin alongside here from Circa. We will talk baseball. I promise you, we have not forgotten that baseball exists. So we will talk baseball with Paul Spohr coming up. Will Hill's got some plays as well. Paul Skeens with a good outing yesterday. So one of the questions I want to ask is, are we sure that National League Rookie of the Year race is over? Are we absolutely sure?
I feel like JVT's leading this charge, by the way. I believe he said it on air with us last week, and then I caught him on the morning line this morning, and it was like, let's not forget baseball still going on.
Well, he said when he came on our show, he said, Gil, thank you for keeping baseball alive. For less than 3 weeks left in a great season, we absolutely have to keep it alive. We'll have the September updated numbers coming up pretty soon here as well on the show. And I have to get to your tweets. Let's just put this one up because we're doing this whole thing where we're putting them on screen now. And so I'm late giving them to Kelly. But here's one from Chance Copperpot. A few years back, your show introduced me to guessing lines. This simple practice has completely turned around my NFL bets for the contests and sides. I don't look at the line, set my own. Biggest differences, get my action. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a beautiful endorsement for guessing lines.
And, you know, in our opinion, everybody should be doing something like that. You know, Drew just went through his, I mean, you'll hear a lot of handicappers go true power ratings, right? Yep. That's what Drew's doing every week. That's where he's talking about a lot of bets that he's making in week two, upgrading and downgrading numbers from what he had from the preseason, leading him to certain bets. We might disagree with him on the Raiders one, but you know.
Yeah.
One of us,
I mean, four, those four games where my instinct was the opposite. One of us is going to be very wrong. Actually, we could split them too, so I shouldn't say that. But it could be that one of us is going to be very right and very wrong. But my thing with that Raiders-Ravens is, and I didn't have time to, so I had interrupted him enough to interrupt him again, but the fact that it's 9.5, if you like the Raiders, you probably should wait because it's going to get to 10, right?
I think so.
So if you like that side, which I don't, I like the Ravens. I already put in a -9.5 because I wanted to grab it before it did so on the Baltimore Ravens. And by the way, I do think that's their MO all the time is that they don't have wide receivers. So, you know, same Ravens that has never stopped them before by, you know, from romping teams, especially at home in the past.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess we didn't talk a whole lot about that game last Friday because we had, you know, like we had a whole
we weren't week, here, yeah.
whole week one slate to get to and everything. But yeah. Zay Flowers looked really damn good to me. Like, that is a watch out for him, I think, going forward.
Yeah, I guess
that's not downfield passing. That's true. They were using him in other ways, but.
We talked about it a little Friday because that was a Thursday game. Mm-hmm. We talked about it. I mean, I don't think I learned anything. Yeah, I don't think anything about my handicap of the Ravens was changed by losing to the Chiefs in that fashion.
And I don't know. Maybe you two, me and you are too early to jump to the, oh boy, does this spot look juicy? But man, I'm sorry. Coming off of a loss against Kansas City.
Yeah. Let's get Matt Brown in here.
Extra rest against this Raiders team. Yeah, I'm laying the wood with the Ravens.
It's a good
week.
Spot for them. What's your favorite spot? Revenge spots? Sandwich spots? What's your favorite spot? When people do NFL handicapping, it's all
the sandwich spot is always because there's always that. It's the letdown spot, too. Right. They're kind of the same thing a lot of times. Like if you're in a sandwich spot, it's a letdown spot.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. OK, I'm very excited about this.
Matt freaked out about that.
Matt went crazy on primetime action about spots. He was just screaming. OK, so Survivor week two. I'm going to go to you first because you said you've narrowed it down to a couple. I would love to hear this because I've narrowed it down to nothing.
So I wanted to talk to you about this. We did get a couple tweets about this, too, of just kind of like, what do you think your strategy is rest of season? And I don't know if I was, I think this may be, this might be one of my biggest week one takeaways is I don't know if I was sold before the season on just fading some of the bad teams throughout the entire year. And at that time, you know, you're thinking mainly New England, you're thinking mainly, you know, the Giants for me, those were the two I had circled. But I mean, after you saw that Carolina New Orleans game, it's add Carolina to the list. So I think most of the season, that will be my strategy. However, this week, I don't know that you fully have the opportunity to do that.
That's the problem. So, but if I think your strategy, I believe I said this on that the quest for 9.2 million docuseries, the easiest, the cleanest strategy in Survivor is just that.
Right. I agree.
Find the bad teams. And if they are so bad, just fade them every week. And then again, the very first year of Circus Survivor, 2020, the pandemic year, that's how most of us got as far as we did, just fading the Jets and the Jaguars. And again, then the Jets nipped us in the butt because they beat the Rams as a 17 point. The Rams were a 17 point favorite. They lost at home to the Jets. So it can take you far, but nothing is not a landmine. I mean, everything's a potential landmine. And to your point, Kelly, Carolina, do you want to take the Chargers on the road against
them? No.
Do you want to take Washington at home against the Giants?
No.
What was the third one?
New England. Seattle at home.
Do you want to take Seattle on the road against New
already
England?
Already played them in one contest. But
you do.
I already played them in week one.
Entries. So,
but no, not really.
So that's the problem with week two. You have immediately crystallized my thoughts.
Well, and it goes even further, right? So that is, I think that will be my strategy for most of the season, is trying to target those three teams.
But
right?
You got to get over this
but
week.
But then there are two, though, that I mentioned yesterday, that I bet yesterday, that immediately jump out to me as, I think, great plays this week. I like them for bets. I like them for Survivor plays, and those would be the Baltimore Ravens and the Houston Texans. Now, what's the big problem with both of those teams?
Let me guess. They have a Thanksgiving or Christmas problem.
They both play on Christmas.
Yeah.
So they would be two of your four options, basically, on Christmas.
This was exactly what I landed on which is...
I don't really know.
So I don't think I can play them. And by the way, because if you go to Christmas... And again, think about where our heads are here before week two. We already talked about how there's a lot of our preseason assumptions weren't right in week one.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we be so arrogant to look at the Christmas schedule and say to ourselves, all right, well, the Texans are at home against the Ravens. That's probably not one you would play anyway. So maybe you can play the Texans here. And the other one was
good point. They play each other.
They play each other.
So that does help out.
So that does help out. Right. So now, okay. So... the problem with that is the only issue with that is, God forbid, I'm not wishing this, but at some point between week two now and week 17, which is when Christmas is, could you have a catastrophic injury to a key player? I don't want to name names because I don't want to put it in the universe. Absolutely. And then that game could avail itself.
Yes.
And remember, on Christmas, Christmas is... December 25th, the Christmas quote-unquote, is three games. Two on Christmas and one on December 26th. So it's Chiefs at Steelers, Ravens at Texans, Seahawks at Bears. Okay. It's only three games.
Yeah, I mean, I have the Chiefs circled for that week.
If you're already eliminating the Ravens-Texans as a possibility, then you're down to two games for what would be the third to last. Is that going to be... That would be the third to last, quote unquote, week.
Yeah.
In Circus Survivor, you would be reducing yourself to two football games if you are, in fact, going to play these teams this week. So can you really afford to do that even though they're playing each other?
I don't know.
This is the beauty. Yes, this is the puzzle of Survivor.
I'm stuck a little bit this week because of that.
Show the chest hair for everybody.
I think I'm still leaning one of those ways this week, but I don't know, because there are plenty of other big favorites that you could look at this week.
You say that, right? And I look at this. I look at these quote unquote big favorites. I don't know why I say quote unquote on that one, but they are the biggest favorites on the board. And you're talking about Dallas, but that has a Thanksgiving consideration. Dallas over the Saints, Detroit over the Buccaneers. That's Thanksgiving as well.
Plus, like both of those, I'll just go back to, are you that confident? Like, I'm not that confident in the Lions or the Cowboys.
Chargers,
the Saints were impressive.
We already talked about the Chargers are the other bigger favorite, right? 6.5. So, okay, from the top of the board here, we show this if you're watching us. So Ravens, we already talked about there on Christmas. Chargers, I mean, do you feel confident playing them on the road against the Panthers? Maybe you do. Maybe you land on the Chargers. Cowboys are Thanksgiving. Lions are Thanksgiving. The Chiefs play on both Thanksgiving and Christmas.
I don't think you can even consider
I don't think them. You can consider them. The Texans, we said, play on Christmas. And then do you want to just bust out the Eagles when there are more natural places, I think, to play the Eagles?
I agree. But I feel that way about Eagles, Cowboys, and Lions. I don't know that, like, these feel like week two, and look, I'm not on the dog in any of those three games, but these feel like a little bit of week two NFL. Are we reacting too much to what we saw week one with these other teams?
Am I going to have to play the Chargers?
I know.
Is Wayne Brady going to have to play the Chargers?
I feel like that's what we're talking ourselves into here. I'm not doing that, though. I'm not doing that in week two. I don't think I'm doing that.
This is brutal. Chargers have no offensive players.
No, man. They got a good line.
We have come to no conclusions here. None. Will Hill on the other side with his baseball thoughts next.